Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. We are back once again with another episode of some scary and allegedly true small-town horror stories sent in by viewers just like you. Now, these stories are downright disturbing, and some of them are outright unexplainable. If you have something in that realm that you would like to share, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, without further ado, be sure to elbow that like button in the face so it knows you mean business. Subscribe and turn on notifications if you're new, as I upload multiple new videos every single week on all things natural and supernatural. And get ready for these creepy and downright strange small town horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. A few years ago, I decided I needed a significant life change. Everything seemed to be going downhill. My finances, my mental health, my life. I would go weeks without sleeping sometimes as the heavy traffic passed through the city streets below. Every time I went outside, I saw homeless people, more needles and crack pipes littering the ground, more muggings and assaults and overdoses and deaths. The city had become a wasteland, and I knew it was my time to leave. I had no girlfriend, no wife, no kids. My parents had both died a few years prior, and I barely talked to my siblings anymore. I had nothing to tie me down to this place where I felt like I was dying inside a little more each and every day. That was when I sold nearly everything I owned, got in my car, and drove up to Alaska to try to start anew. I bought a small cabin and a plot of land in the middle of its majestic mountains and dark, enchanting forest. In the winter, the northern lights would shine through like the eyes of God, sending out divine trails of light that danced through the sky in cosmic waves. While the move did help give me some peace of mind, the source of all my problems had ultimately followed me 1,000 miles into the endless wilderness. It would take me a long time to realize that because of all the misery was inside of myself, that I would never escape it. Because, as a wise man once said, wherever I go, there I am. I lived in that cabin for 3 months without any major issues, aside from the constant threat of bears, moose, and wolves. I had a rifle and a shotgun for hunting, a small garden in the backyard, and a solar panel to generate electricity. This is the life, I said, relaxing on a hammock, strung across the corner of the cabin, while staring at the endless beauty directly outside my window. White-capped mountains loomed like giants in the thick clusters of evergreens. A virgin covering of fluffy snow made their entire world glisten and sparkle. There wasn't a house or road in sight. No work, no stress, no pollution, no cars honking all the time. I closed my eyes, breathing in the air. I fell asleep for a couple of hours, waking up just as the sun had started setting. Bright orange streaks mixed with bloody smears of the fading light as they disappeared behind the mountains. I groggily arose, stumbling over to make a cup of instant coffee. As I sipped it, I wandered around the room, looking for something to pass the time. There were still quite a few random objects left behind by the last owner that I hadn't really gotten rid of yet. I had moved in just to find a stocked bookshelf full with classics like Philip K. Dick, Isaac Asimov, and Robert Heinlein. Bored, I started rifling through the collection, looking for something good to pass the time. As I shuffled past A Maze of Death and Ubik, something caught my eyes. A black, leather-bound book with no title or author name stood there. Its cover faded with time and wear. Curious, I pulled it out and opened it. I saw the cursive scrawled across the pages in a neat, copper plate script and realized it was a diary left by the previous owner. The first entry date was January 9th, 2015, and this is what it said. I don't know if I'm going crazy or not. I went into town to talk to my therapist yesterday, and she said I should try writing everything down. She talks to me like it's all in my head, but I know it's not. When I first moved into the cabin, it seemed like paradise. I never thought in a million years that something would be slinking around at night, hiding under my bed, peeking in windows, and following me like a shadow. Right now, I'm snowed in with a cup of coffee in one hand and a pistol in the other. I can't sleep anymore, and I keep hearing something shuffling around under the bed. Sometimes I think I even hear ragged breathing, as if a corpse with dirt in its lungs had come back to life. I caught a glimpse of that thing in the darkness. Whatever it is, its skin is loose, almost falling off the bone. It looks like a naked, emaciated man. Its eyes are rotted and dark, its back hunched, its spine twisted and jutting out like tumors. It moves slowly, jerky, but I can never catch it. Its body seems broken and out of alignment. Its legs bend the wrong way sometimes. When I turn the lights or try to take a video of it, it's always disappeared. But its fetid odor remains. It lingers in the cabin like a sweet-smelling, spreading infection. I don't know what it wants from me. I want to leave, but the storm raging outside is keeping me stuck here, unable to get back to town. The snow surrounds the cabin and mounds 5 feet high. I feel like a prisoner caged in with a rabid beast, not knowing when it will strike. My wife claims she hasn't seen or heard anything, but keeps vanishing on me. Last night, she disappeared in the middle of a snowstorm. Where did she go? I asked her in the morning, but she said that she was there the whole time. She didn't remember anything. There's no way she went into town. There wasn't time, and the trails were impassable that far down. Something's happening out here, but I don't know what it was. I'm petrified for our lives. I slammed the diary shut, not wanting to read anymore. I didn't want to become infected by a contagious cabin fever. If the last owner had gone insane in the mountains and started hallucinating naked corpses crawling around, I didn't want to know. I shoved the diary back in the bookshelf, going for a maze of death instead. I tried to forget what I had read in the diary as I flew through the novella. Alright, I tried to get the image of the naked twisting man with the rotted eyes out of my head, but I couldn't. I eventually fell asleep right before dawn, but as my eyes were closing, I thought I saw a silhouette in the window. A starved man with excited black eyes that seemed to be rotting out of his skull. I thought I saw him with his inhumanly long fingers pressing them against the glass as he leaned forward. I blinked, sitting up and glancing out into the white, snow-covered wonderland. There was nothing there. Another hunter occasionally followed the deer trails near my cabin. A frozen lake stood a quarter mile away, the surface white and covered in thick snowdrifts. Bundled up, I decided to go outside for a hike in the frigid dawn. I strapped on my snowshoes and grabbed my shotgun. As I always did when I went outside. After all, I knew, then, that polar bears might be waiting around and could be around any tree. I opened the door, seeing footprints pressed into the snow around my house. At first, I thought it was the silhouette that I had seen, the nightmarish thing from the diary. But the footprints didn't go over to my window. They followed the trail 20 feet away, veering off towards the frozen lake at the bottom of the hill. I glanced down in that direction, seeing a black figure slowly forward. "Steve!" I cried, recognizing my only neighbor within a 4-mile radius. He had a cabin about a mile away on his little plot. He jumped, clearly startled by my sudden noise. His black snow pants and heavy fur coat swished together as he spun, raising his rifle high. When he saw me, he immediately lowered the rifle and put a gloved hand up in a friendly greeting. "Hey, Josh, surprised to see you up this early," he yelled over the muted wintry landscape. Sounds always seemed different after snowing, as if the world's noise had faded and died. "Yeah, I've been having some trouble sleeping," I said, slinging my gun around my shoulder. "What are you doing anyway?" "Just a little hunting, you know," he said, giving me a wink. "Animals are always more active at dusk and dawn. That's when I always have the best luck, anyway." He stepped close to me, staring at me in the eyes. "You do look pretty terrible. Those bags under your eyes are big enough to carry groceries in." "Yeah, trust me. I know. Hey, this might sound a little weird, but did you know the previous owner of this cabin?" I asked. Steve's wrinkled old face fell into a scowl. His expression immediately became guarded and distant. "Sure, sure. We met," he exclaimed bluntly. He searched my face for something, but I didn't know what. His reaction left me feeling off balance and nervous. "Are they still around?" I said. Steve's scowl deepened. Buddy, I don't know what this is all about, but he's dead. He's been dead. He died in that cabin. He pointed a finger at my home accusingly. With those words, my heart seemed to drop into my stomach. Waves of dread flowed through my body like water. How did he die? Like a heart attack or something? I asked. Steve's gaze turned downwards, and he met my eyes. Do you know that Alaska has the highest missing persons rate in the entire United States? It's not even close. In fact, for the population size, we have far more people who go missing and never found than anywhere else. They even have a name for it. The Alaskan Triangle, Steve said. And we're square in the middle of it, buddy. I stared blankly at him, wondering where he was going with this. It seemed like a way to avoid answering my question. No, I didn't know that, I responded. Steve nodded, raising his head again. He heaved a deep sigh. Look, the thing with the last donor and his wife is somewhat disturbing. I'll tell you if you want to know, but I will not help your peace of mind because this will make everything worse. It's not going to help you get some sleep, you know what I mean? I want to know, I insisted instantly. The wind started to whip past us. Flakes of ice and snow flew sideways in the sudden currents. Let's go back to your cabin then, Steve said, pulling his heavy fur-lined hood off and shaking his long, black hair behind him. I could use a bit of whiskey to warm up. We sat down with a bottle of Johnny Walker and two shot glasses. I wasn't much of a drinker, but Steve certainly was. He chugged three shots in a minute. I sipped at mine, drinking half and putting it on the coffee table with a thunk. Steve grunted, hissing through his open mouth for a moment. That's the good stuff, he said, slamming his chest as the burning liquor worked its way down. Steve looked up at me with a new sparkle in his eye. So, you want to know what happened to Will Lenning? Well, I'll tell you what nobody else knows, and I'll give you the whole story. I used to see him occasionally come down, drink, and talk. Well, we knew each other around here. I nodded, motioning to him to continue on. He seemed like a regular, upstanding guy. He kind of reminded me of you. A young guy trying to escape the hustle and bustle of city life, the cancer of the American dream. Well, he was up here for a couple of months, and I don't know. Everything seemed fine. We used to go skeet shooting occasionally and have some beer. We'd get together with a couple of other hunters who live closer to town and sometimes play some poker. I never saw anything odd about the guy. I never could have predicted what happened to him. He heaved a long sigh at this, looking out the window at the sharp mountains with an expression of nostalgia. Well, what happened to him? I asked, encouraging him to go on. He started talking about seeing someone peeking in through his window at night. He talked about hearing sounds under his bed while laying in the dark, like diseased breathing and shuffling. He started keeping all the lights on in his cabin 24 hours a day. Steve leaned close to me. A glimmer of fear rippled across his pale, wrinkled face. He started to lose his mind. He started digging holes all over the place looking for something. Even in the middle of snowstorms, I would occasionally see him outside digging. It seemed like he never slept anymore. It was classic cabin fever if I ever saw it. It was only a few weeks later that I came over here concerned. I hadn't heard from him in a few days, which was unusual. I found the door hanging wide open, popped up in a chair, like the exact spot where you're sitting now. Will lay with a blast hole showing clear through his skull, a shotgun lying next to his feet. Next to him, I found a blood-stained diary opened to the middle of the page. The last entry, stained with blood spatter but still visible. I remembered leaning down and reading it. It was only a few sentences long. I glanced over at the bookshelf at the same diary, saying nothing. It said, I see now what's going on. That twisted man is leading me to the truth. Today I will finally find it. And that was a suicide note? I asked, my heart hammering in my chest. He nodded. Yeah, I went into town, got some rangers to come back and check it out. Eventually, they got cops and CSI there. They took all the stuff as evidence, including the diary, he said. Good riddance, I say. Reading something like that was never beneficial. Sometimes delusions spread like a virus, you know what I mean? I did, but I didn't say anything. I glanced back at the diary, its black leather cover gleaming like a crouching snake, and I wondered if the police took the diary as evidence. And if they did, how did it return here? You said you had a wife living with him too, I asked. Yeah, she went missing around the same time, he said. It's pretty bizarre. The cops thought that maybe she just moved away, but he shook his head grimly. As far as I knew, she was never seen again, and it was like she had just evaporated into thin air. After Steve left, I walked stiffly over to the bookshelf, taking down the diary. I flipped open through the pages. In the middle, I found the last entry. Spatters of old, darkened blood were scattered over the page like raindrops. I found the suicide note and read the date, January 27th, 2015. Will Lenning had not lived long after he started seeing the twisted man. I wondered if my fate would be the same. The sun had started to set outside. I sat with the diary at the small circular kitchen table, eating some stewed venison and rice while reading the entries. In the end, Will says that the twisted man has been trying to guide him somewhere, that the twisted man has been trying to protect him from the rather great evil that was lurking around here. I scoffed, feeling a flash of anger at the stupidity of all this. His naivety led him to death, but then a flash of insight struck me like lightning. What if I was committing the same kind of stupidity? I should grab my gun and valuables and leave while I can. I could take off on the snowmobile and be in town within a few hours' time, but in my heart, I knew I would not. Something about the mystery of this beckoned me to stay, like a siren leading sailors to destruction. I was curious and knew I would not be leaving that night. I needed answers, and sadly, I would have to find them. I had fallen asleep with an empty bottle of beer in my hand. I sat in front of the TV, which only received satellite reception. Of course, no cable or phone lines were threading their way through the forest. All of my power came from stored solar energy in a generator. Since I rarely watched TV and only really used it to cook or heat water for bathing, the energy produced was sufficient even in winter. I needed its sound, mindless flashing of light and colors and canned laughter tonight. Though, it seemed to drive away the creeping, suffocating presence like a candle. I woke suddenly. The TV flashed with static. The repetitive hissing of the white noise spit from the speakers like thousands of snakes. I glanced up at the clock and it was 3:33 a.m. I looked around the dark cabin, confused for a long moment. I didn't understand what had woken me so abruptly. The satellite had not gone out, even with the howling winds and freezing hail of the Alaskan winter. The TV started flickering as if the static were rising upwards. Black lines traced their way horizontally across the screen. The hissing deepened into a gurgle, and for a second, I thought I heard the faint words behind the white noise. I thought I heard breathing, slow and diseased, like the death gasp of a drowning man. A black line rose across the TV and an image appeared. The cabin was suddenly silent, except for the shrieking, wintry wind outside. I leaned close to the screen, confused as to what the freak I was looking at. It looked like a live camera feed of a room. As I took in the details, I realized it was my cabin. I saw myself in the chair, leaning close to the screen. I raised my hand and the miniature version of me did the same thing. Ice water seemed to drip down my spine as waves of dread coursed through my body. "What the freak is this?" I whispered, looking back to where the camera should be. But there was nothing there. It was just a coarse wooden ceiling in the corner. I turned back to the screen and nearly screamed. The TV showed a pale, naked man crouching directly behind my chair. With jerky movements, he rose his broken spine, twisting and shivering. A hissing voice rang out from the speakers. It spoke as if it had dirt writhing maggots in its throat.
"He's a killer. The shadow of death,"
it gurgled.
"Many have fallen. Many lie buried across this forest. You will be next. He is watching you."
Long broken fingers with blackened nails reached out to touch my shoulders. I jumped out of the chair, stumbling back as I spun in terror. My back smashed into the TV and it fell into the floor, shattering. Explosion of light popped in, and then in those movements before the darkness descended on me like a blanket, I thought I glimpsed a pale, sunken face with rotted blackened eyes peeking out from behind the tree. I turned on every light in the cabin, but there was no sign of the twisted man in or around the cabin. I knew I had to get out of there, though. I thought about the warning that the voice had spoken. If the creature wanted to attack me, then why hadn't it just killed me while I was asleep? None of it made any sense. Who was watching me? The twisted man? And if he was, why warn me? Perhaps it's some sort of psychological warfare, I thought to myself. Possibly the twisted man was simply playing with me. Thoughts raced through my head at 1,000 miles an hour as I threw on snow pants and got some couple heavy sweaters on and coats. I covered up my entire body as much as I could. I wanted to prevent frostbite at all possible. I had made up my mind to flee. There was no snowstorm tonight, though the entire landscape was blanketed with deep, fresh snow, and I knew the wind chill would be like an ice blade whipping against my skin. Traveling in the middle of the night in temperatures that might reach negative 30 degrees was hazardous. Steve had been right, after all. Alaska had the highest missing persons rate of any state, and many of them were never found, their bodies likely frozen solid in the deep snow, dozens of miles away from the nearest town. I grabbed my shotgun, jumped on my snowmobile, and headed to Steve's cabin. I hoped to wait until sunrise and figure out what to do next, but fate would take the decision out of my hands. I felt like eyes were watching me as I drove along the narrow, winding deer trail. The boughs of the evergreens reached into the path like greedy hands, grabbing at my coat and legs. More than a couple of times, I thought I saw a pale, naked figure standing in the snow, but it had always gone when I turned to look. I sighed in relief when Steve's place appeared in the distance. I could see the lights twinkling through the small windows of his log cabin. I pulled up next to his door, looking down. I saw two pairs of footprints, one smaller than the others. I found it odd, but shrugged it off. The snowmobile cut out a sucking gurgle. I knocked on the door a few hard times. Steve appeared after a few moments, groggy and half-dressed. He blinked slowly as he looked me up and down. His wrinkled face fell into a frown. "Steve, I need a favor," I said quickly. "Something weird is happening in my cabin. Can I stay here until morning? Until maybe I can get to town or something? I can't stay at my place tonight. I just can't." He nodded, yawning and motioning me to come in. "You can sleep on the couch, I guess," Steve said. "Put that shotgun somewhere safe, though, boy." He had a partitioned bedroom in his cabin. It was significantly larger than my one little bedroom cabin, you know. Though it still had a joint kitchen, living room, small bedroom, and bathroom, he pointed to a well-worn couch in the corner and gave me an apathetic wave as he stumbled back into his bedroom, slamming the door. I couldn't sleep, though. I tiptoed around the room looking at Steve's bookshelf. He had a strange taste in books. Lots of And Rule and all kinds of weird true crime. I saw a dozen books about Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, Richard Chase, Herbert Mullen, Jeffrey Dahmer, and Richard Ramirez in the collection. A large black binder stood at the end, unlabeled and worn-looking. It reminded me of that leather-bound diary for a second, and my heart dropped. But logically, I knew this had to just be a coincidence. Yet still, I pulled out the binder. My curiosity piqued. What I saw inside filled me with dread and horror. Countless news clippings covered the length of it. The first clipping was from nearly 20 years before, about a woman who went missing in the Alaskan forest while hiking. A later one confirmed that her body was never found, and that her family was still hoping that she might turn up alive somewhere. A reward was offered for any information, it said. And every page after that was more of the same. Missing woman, murdered prostitute, missing man, no leads. I kept flipping through until I found clippings about Will Lenning's suicide and the sudden disappearance of his wife. In the article about the suicide, Steve used a red marker to scrawl, "Ha ha," next to it. I heard the click of a gun being cocked from behind me. I froze as Steve's voice traveled across the room like a whisper. "How do you like my work, my friend?" he asked, his tone pleasant and mocking. I still held the Binder of Horrors tightly in my hand as I stared open-mouthed at this man I thought I knew. It's you? You killed Will and his wife and all the other women? Everything felt as unreal as it could, like if I were stuck in some sort of dream. Steve's grin spread across his face, but his blue eyes stayed cold and dead. Yes. Well, she was cheating on him with me anyways. Just another whore, you know? They always get what's coming to them in the end. He hissed with hatred oozing from his voice. It's too bad I just killed another slut tonight. I was planning on saving you for later. The urge isn't too bad yet right now. After all, it comes in cycles, you see. It comes in waves. I saw a glimmer of pale, naked flesh writhing behind Steve. With jerky movements, the twisted man came up behind him. I said nothing, just watching the wide-eyed horror in amazement. You need help, man, I whispered. Steve laughed. Help? The only help they give people like me is a needle in the arm. You know that. That's why it's important to cover your tracks. The twisted man ran along, broken fingers across Steve's neck. Steve gave a strangled cry and jumped. He spun around screaming. I glanced over at my shotgun next to the couch. I jumped for it, and Steve turned back to me, firing his pistol twice. The first bullet soared high above me, raining wooden splinters down on my head. But the second ripped into my leg. A cold, burning pain ran like fire up my shin. I screamed in agony and battle fury as I grabbed the shotgun, spinning and firing. Steve's head exploded as the slug ripped through his brain. His forehead collapsed like a smashed melon as bone splinters and blood sprayed the wall behind him. The twisted man stood there hunched over, grinning at me. It felt weird. I started to feel more warm, blood gushing from my leg as I stared back at this thing, breathing harder. I wondered if I was dying. You weren't after me after all, I asked. You were after Steve. But the twisted man said nothing. After a long moment, he slinked back into the shadows of the bedroom and disappeared. As night crawled toward morning, I thought back to the twisted man's words through the TV, suddenly understanding everything. He is the killer, the shadow of death. Many have fallen. Many lie buried across this forest. You will be next. He is watching you. He hadn't been trying to hurt me at all. He had been trying to warn me. He had probably tried to warn Will Lenning and his wife, too. I wrapped my leg in gauze, gritting my teeth. The wound looked puckered and deep, but I knew I could still move my foot. The bullet had gone through clean, and luckily enough, I poured alcohol on it, screaming in pain as it burned its way through my skin. After rummaging through Steve's bathroom, I found some prescription painkillers and swallowed a handful of them with some beer. I knew I would need the opiate high to get through the pain of riding into town with a mutilated leg. As the sun finally rose, I made my way outside the blood-stained floors of the cabin to my snowmobile. Before I left, I glanced back at the horrid place, the scene of so much torment and death. In the open doorway, the twisted man stood, his back hunched, his rotted lips grinning at me, his hand lifted into the air with jerky movements, almost like it was waving. I waved back, started the engine, and headed into town. For a little backstory, Daniel was my childhood best friend from my neighborhood, and he lived in the building next to mine in the year of 1993, if I remember correctly. But we all called him Dan for short. This is his story, and he swears it's totally true. Since Dan was 8 or 9 years old, his mother, his stepfather, and he moved to a small neighborhood in a city in South America, which is located in a valley and is surrounded by a mountain and woods on all sides. The neighborhood was on the east side of the city on a dead-end street of a closed neighborhood, but there were a lot of green areas all around it, such as small hills with big and small trees, plants, flowers, grass, 2 parks, and a sports court. When Dan and his family moved to the neighborhood, he was very happy because when they were getting there in his mom's car, he could see lots of places where he could play in and explore. So as a kid, that was a very exciting thing. Even though the hills, woods, and plants that surrounded Dan's new neighborhood looked really nice during the day and while the sun was up, they looked very dark and creepy at night, and he thought they were really scary. He felt an ominous presence from those woods at night. At that age, Dan was afraid of many things, like the dark, the woods, wolves, black dogs, cats, spiders, sharks, you name it. Just like me, and this was because he was a total mama's boy. And at 5 years old, what do you expect? When Dan and I met for the first time, we were both playing in the park while our babysitters were watching us and talking to each other. We immediately bonded and became friends because we had a lot of things in common. We started talking about our favorite TV shows and movies such as Star Wars, Dragon Ball Z, the X-Men cartoons, and Ninja Turtles, among many others. So, we used to play by pretending we were superheroes or some sort of cartoon character while running around, using the merry-go-round, the slides, the swings, and funny enough, we both had plastic lightsabers. So we fought as if we were Jedis or Ninja Turtles, but we never stayed in the park once the sun went down either, because our sisters did not let us, or we were just too scared, honestly. However, Dan was not my only friend in the neighborhood. I introduced him to my other friends who lived in my building and other buildings and houses. Their names were the following: Eliza, Diego, JP, Mike, Laura, and Gerard. All of us were around the same age, and we all became great friends as the months went by, because almost every afternoon we played sports, played in the park, trick-or-treated, had water balloon fights, played Nintendo together, climbed the hills and woods behind our buildings during the day, and even did everything together. The neighborhood kids liked to joke around by saying that the woods behind the buildings were haunted. At that time, we played hide-and-seek or cops and robbers, so we ran around the street until 7 p.m., because that was our curfew, and we had to do our boring homework after that. But Dan and I went to bed late at night in secret, while we talked quietly on the phone. That night, it was like 9 or 10 p.m., I think. Dan asked me the following: "Did you watch X-Men today?" "Yeah, dude, of course. I would not miss it for the world. Did you see the fight against Apocalypse and the Four Horsemen?" "Yeah, dude. That fight was awesome. I loved it. But talking about something else, have you heard some creepy noises behind your building at night?" "Nah, bro, I'm a deep sleeper, so I usually black out." "Wow, I wish I was that lucky. You know, I usually can hear footsteps in those woods at night, and I also sleepwalk sometimes. Well, I think it's time for me to go to sleep. See you tomorrow. Take care, bro." "Sure thing, man. Talk to you tomorrow. Take care." Dan hung up his favorite hamburger-shaped phone, sat down in bed, grabbed an old fantasy book about dragons that was on his nightstand, and started reading it until he began to close his eyes and doze off. He fell into a deep sleep, and was now dreaming, or so he thought. In his dream, Dan could hear the crickets in the forest, but was woken up by some strange steps walking around the forest and the leaves crunching beneath him, or as if some person or animal was walking in the woods. There are a lot of cats in the neighborhood, so he thought it was one of those cats potentially, maybe a possum or an owl. All of a sudden, he heard a low whisper that beckoned him and said, "Daniel, it's Professor X. The X-Men need your help. Come to the woods and help us." This strange, but yet familiar voice was very similar to the professor's voice from his favorite cartoon, and it sounded like it was right outside of his window. Since he was a naive and innocent child, he decided to get out of bed, put on his jacket and boots, took his glasses, got out of his apartment, and went to the ground floor. Once he was on the ground floor, he walked to his building's parking lot. He felt a little cold, so he rubbed his shoulders with his hands. The voice kept calling out to him, "Help the X-Men, Dan!" Somehow, he felt extremely attracted to this voice, like metal to a magnet, because he could not get it out of his head. He took a small leap to get on top of a small hill. He then felt very scared, but kept walking into the dark and creepy woods. While he was walking, he heard other footsteps and leaves crunching beside his. He felt like these steps were approaching his position. At that moment, he stopped walking so he could hear the steps more clearly, since he thought it was some crazy person or an animal that was insane enough to walk in the woods in the middle of the night. There are a lot of cats in this neighborhood, like I said, so Dan thought it was one of those cats. Maybe it was some other sort of animal. But then he heard a noise that sounded like a roar. He thought it sounded very similar to those dinosaurs from Jurassic Park. He had recently seen that movie in theaters, so it was the closest thing he could think of. Suddenly, He heard fast steps from somebody or something running in his direction. Dan broke out of his trance. He looked around, and his little kid's mind felt so terrified that he passed out, and fortunately, when he hit the ground, his body was positioned between a tall tree and a large boulder. So, he barely heard how this trickster creature ran next to him, circled his location, and then it smelled the air in order to get a scent, but he guessed it decided to leave. Dan assumed he had passed out for several hours, because he was woken up by the sound of a woodpecker, cicadas, and birds that were on a nearby tree. The heat and glare from the sun in his face woke him up. He rubbed his eyes, opened them, and looked all around him. He was in shock and horrified when he looked at his Spider-Man watch and saw that it was 6 a.m. He had woken up in the middle of the forest. He thought he was going to wake up in his bed because he was dreaming, but he had sleepwalked into the forest in order to follow that beckoning voice. He saw his clothes were full of fallen leaves, so Dan quickly stood up, brushed the leaves from his arms and legs, and ran away from that creepy forest, which looked normal during the day. He climbed down the forest until he got into his parking lot. He ran to his building's door, opened it, ran to the elevator, and he saw himself in the mirror and could not believe that happened to him. Dan got to his apartment door, opened the door silently, tiptoed inside the apartment's hallway, and saw that thankfully his mother and father had not woken up yet. So, he went to bed and stared at the ceiling, trying to process what occurred last night. He completely believed his parents when they told him not to listen to strangers, especially if they are in the middle of a dark and creepy forest. So, Dan had many questions and thought to himself, how did this creature imitate Professor X's voice? How did it know he would listen to it? How did it know he loved the X-Men cartoon? Maybe he would never find out, or maybe he would. Who knows? Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true small towns horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to slap that like button silly so it knows you mean business. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Subscribe and turn on notifications. It helps us out a ton. I upload multiple videos on all things natural and supernatural every single week. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep us going on a daily basis. If you're on the go but don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories, no matter where you are, for free, you can download them from Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and pretty much everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. It's absolutely free and always will be. If you'd like to support the Swamp, maybe check out our merch store. You can find t-shirts, hoodies, all kinds of cool stuff over there. You can also find me on social media. Giving me a follow over there helps me out a ton. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy episode.